Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island-chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, and everybody got a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. My very special guest from larderay.wordpress.com is, coincidentally enough, Lada Ray, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinnie. Nice to be here.
Let us know a little bit of background about who you are and what you do.
I am originally from Russia. I have been in the U.S. for about 18 years, and I have been a translator at some point, including a gig in Cuba, and met Fidel Castro there on a couple of occasions. Then I worked as a financial consultant here in the U.S. for Citigroup, for AIG, infamous companies, then decided to finally do what I really wanted to do. Went to Asia, studied feng shui and various spiritual and metaphysical matters, and then I decided to write, and now I write full time. So I wrote several books. It's currently I'm writing fiction, but I also have a lot of designs, and I'm writing nonfiction as well. My fiction is mystery thrillers and fantasy thrillers. The latest book is The Earthshifter. The Earthshifter is a fantasy thriller which deals with world conspiracies and various spy, CIA, KGB, psychic spies primarily, as well as fantasy, underworld, different realms of existence, earth keepers, and the comet of karma, which incidentally recently we had an incident in Russia, which is actually described in the book. Very similar situation as described in The Earthshifter. And another book that deals with conspiracy front and center is Gold Train, which is accidental spy Russia adventure. And that's about an American journalist turned spy extraordinaire who goes to Russia to investigate an old mystery of the missing gold of the Russian Empire. And instead, she lands smack in the middle of a new conspiracy to take over the country and change the balance of power in the world. So these are just two of the books. And of course, I plan on writing books about my predictions. I made a lot of predictions in the past, notably predictions. In 2012, I predicted all the major elections. I called them Obama, Putin and Russia, and also the French elections as well, which actually nobody believed that Sarkozy would lose it. I predicted he would lose it, and here it is. So I intend to write a book of predictions as well, when the time allows me to do so.
Okay. Well, how exactly do you come up with these predictions? Are you, you know, calculating, or are you just imagining and making it up off the top of your head?
Yes, there is a method to this madness. Actually, it's a combination of things. I worked as a financial consultant, and I know a lot about geopolitics. Also, I lived in about 26 countries, or visited a number of countries as well. And so I know a lot about what is going on, what was going on in the world. I also have a system that comes from, which I constructed myself, as a matter of fact, but it originates from the ancient Chinese system of long cycles, which has its basis in feng shui. It's a complicated system. It's a system that nobody knows nowadays, but which I learned from the Asian masters of feng shui. And all of that, in combination with my own intuition, allows me to predict things. I predicted I'm not the only one, but for my clients, I predicted and asked them to get out of real estate before it collapses in the U.S. And those who did actually cashed in quite nicely, for example. That's the system.
Okay, fair enough. And what made you decide to change from these financial trader ideas and things like that into writing? What motivated you to do that?
At one point, I came back to my senses, let's put it this way. What was going on Wall Street was just horrendous. I worked I started working there in the late 90s when the market was going up. There was irrational exuberance, as we all know, going on. And it was all very nice until I discovered the shady dealings and what really was going on behind the scenes. Lots of things were done. What you hear in the media today, in the alternative media primarily, all these derivatives, how clients are swindled, literally. And I worked for major wirehouses. Salomon Smith Barney is a major wirehouse. And they really don't, they are so strict, seemingly, about compliance with all the rules and regulations. And yet they would sell their research to clients, and then they would this research would be something that is convenient to their biggest clients, who behind the scenes they actually work for, and they get the fee for working for large IPOs, for example, major companies, and then they rate them as buys. So their clients, my clients, think that that's a good deal. They buy it, and then the stock goes down, for example. It happened on numerous occasions. Then a lot of things were actually fixed in such a way. And that was in the early days of when the game was fixed. By the early 2000s, I already knew that this was not the place to be for me. Forgive me this, the high wording of this, but it's kind of needed to save my soul, needed to kind of, I could not sacrifice my soul anymore to all this. So I started studying spirituality, different esoteric disciplines. And when in 2003, U.S. invaded Iraq, I think everything clicked into place for me, just literally everything. That was the turn. I was not interested in politics or geopolitics or predictions at all before that. I had absolutely zero interest. And then I knew that they would invade Iraq. It was just clear to me at some point, starting in 2002.
What did the huge did the huge quantity of George W. Bush and all the administration officials saying we're going to war in Iraq have something to do with that prediction?
Yeah. Well, once I remember I was sitting in a cafe having lunch during my break. I still worked at Smith Barney at the time. So the cafe was full. It was lunch hour, it was full house. And the TV was on. And the TV was broadcasting how the UN is not authorizing intervention in Iraq. So there is a group of several men sitting there and eating their lunch. And one of those men says aloud for everybody to hear, "Oh, just let our boys go there and do their job. Why are they listening to this, blah, 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 UN? What does it matter what others think?" And that was, I absolutely knew that was it. And of course, sure enough, it happens. And I think a lot of people started waking up at that point and really looking at things that were going on in the world, how everything was changing. How everything was changing in the U.S. primarily. At that point, everybody started looking, people who were never interested in politics. Oh, incidentally, I also predicted, my friends almost killed me at that point. I predicted the re-election of George Bush in 2004, to my dismay. And my friends were not happy with that prediction, but that was the truth. So
yeah. Yeah. My friends weren't happy when I predicted the re-election of John Key in the 2012 elections, and they couldn't believe it. It was like, "Vinny, how could you say that? How could you say that? Look at it! Look at how much everybody hates him." And I say, "Okay, he was sent here to destroy the country. It's not destroyed yet. Hence, he's going to get re-elected."
That's interesting. You should say that. You know. I know it's not, perhaps to some it's not entirely politically correct, but I completely remove myself from these personal feelings here. I'm just constating a fact here. You know, Obama in Russia is referred to as Black Gorbachev. Well, obviously because he's black, but, you know, the reference here is to a similar role that he's playing. And do you know how the Russians think about Gorbachev, what role they feel he played in the country? Well, he's loved in the West, in the U.S. and all that. You know, I personally respect the man, so I don't side with those who hate him. A lot of Russians absolutely hate him. They feel, and now you will probably see an interesting similarity. I'm sure a lot of American listeners will see that similarity. They feel Gorbachev destroyed a great country that was USSR. And right now, I see a lot of this sentiment in the U.S. when people feel that there is this destruction of a great country. I'm not saying that USSR and USA are the same kind of country. In some ways, they are.
yes, they are. It's the USSA and the USSR.
Exactly. We do have that abbreviation going on, yes. Well, two empires, and basically USA is following in the footsteps. Do you know the book called The Reinventing Collapse by Dmitry Orlov? Oh, a great book, by the way. I highly recommend it to anybody who wants to study how the... from a layman's perspective and also from somewhat of an outsider perspective, Orlov is an author who actually is, he's an engineer, software engineer, I believe, in Boston. He immigrated from Russia in the 1990s, actually probably around the same time that I left the country. Probably, I don't know what age he is, but he might be around my age, maybe like 10 years old or something like that. Anyway, he wrote this book based on his trips, many trips back, and also his knowledge and experience, and also interviewing other people. It's a fascinating read. I do not agree with everything there, although I would easily give that book 5 stars. And I highly recommend it to anybody. Reinventing Collapse by Dmitry Orlov. Well, he believes that he actually, we all thought that USA would already start like economically collapsing at this point. It's not happening yet. It's a fascinating study how different it is. To me, and this is my prediction, USSR and USA are approaching collapse from the opposite directions. It's like a mirror image, in other words. In the USSR, what did we have? Well, most would think not enough political freedom, not enough economical freedom. Seemingly, there was plenty of that in the USA, say in the 1980s, 1970s, even 1990s. So while in the USSR, all these freedoms, little by little, started enlarging, started growing, more and more economical and political freedom emerges, and the country is becoming more and more democratic. Same with prosperity, by the way. Prosperity is growing. In the USA, it is actually diminishing. More of a police state. Fewer economical freedoms. More and more people that are disenfranchised. And also, of course, prosperity is diminishing. These are some of the things that are happening currently in the USA. And another thing, while it was very...
If I may. Let me get this straight. The reason for the collapse of the USSR is people actually started to have some kind of benefit out of the country. And the reason for the collapse of the USSA is that people are losing all benefits of being part of that country.
Well, yes, in some ways, yes. But basically, we have to assume that all empires collapse one way or the other. You get too big for your own good, you collapse. It's when? That's a different story. You know, I could say that perhaps, to me, 2015 should be the beginning when we should see serious collapse.
Okay.
Starting. You know?
All right. Predictions from Lada Ray, ladies and gentlemen. 2015, you're all fracked, okay? Get your storable food and your Patriot Snuggies with the 11 years of ammunition in the pockets, and we'll be right back after this break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Just got a little bit of an announcement here. I'm down to my last $50 because PayPal, in their infinite wisdom, where everybody subscribes and donates and that kind of thing, basically the entire reason why the show even goes on air every day is because of the listeners' very, very generous donations and the subscriptions, which are recurring. So every week I've got new money coming into the PayPal account. It's how I survive. And just barely at that. So what PayPal has done is they have blocked my account. And they will not process any more transactions to little old Vinnie Eastwood. They're citing that I must prove that I'm a charitable organization and all current funds in the account will be held for 180 days. Then I will be able to withdraw them. And the decision is final. Thank you, PayPal. Frackers. Yeah. So if you do want to donate to the show or if you currently have a PayPal subscription, you need to cancel that and go to the homepage, thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. There is a new donate button for Paymate. It's an Australian-based PayPal alternative to make just one-off donations. And for any other kinds of automatic payments, please change them to the KiwiBank account number, which is on the homepage of the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. So we've got those two options available for you there. And of course, reiterate, I'm down to my last $50 because there was a couple of hundred in the PayPal account when they cancelled it. So I guess I'll claim that in about 180 days, but it doesn't help me in the immediate. So if you want to donate between $1 and $100 a month, you know, you choose. We'll give you commercial-free archives. Just send me an email and tell me that you've donated or add a thing, because that's the other thing. That's the problem with donating into the bank account, is that you can't put heaps of details on there. Like, you can't put your email address. You can't do anything. I don't even know who the hell's putting money into that account. So if you could remind me by sending me an email, there's a contact form on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com if you're doing that. Yeah, really stressful situation. Extremely stressful situation. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. When some scumbag, you know, like, you work for 3 freaking years doing a radio show like this, of basically the sole support of listeners functioning through PayPal, and then they take it away from you and then lock all your cash away in there as well, and knowing that there's virtually no viable alternative that exists on the web. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Yeah. So sorry, Vinny, to hear that. I just went on your show. I went on your website. I mean, your show's website, I meant to say. And I saw that, and I was going to actually start a donation program. And I saw that everything has ceased with that PayPal situation. You know, PayPal is very well known in the U.S. for seizing accounts and for freezing them. It is speaking of conspiracies, it is that kind of organization. I've known this for years. Unfortunately, they do that. I don't know if it's done deliberately or somebody actually has some interest in freezing your account. This has been also known to happen. You know, the accounts are frozen for a specific reason. You know, I don't know what might have happened in this case, but it's all very, very strange. And I'm really sorry to hear that. And I encourage everybody to donate to Vinny's show, because it's really wonderful. You know, I'm going to go to this bank and I'm going to donate, you know, that information you provided. I'm going to do that as soon as possible.
Well, thank you, Lada. That really helps. Yeah. Well, I see the whole reason why people donate to me. I don't know why you people donate, but thank you.
Well, you need it to get this program going. You need it, right? Because how else are you going to make money?
Well, I think it's like we need each other. Like, I need the listeners to give me something so that I can just continue to provide the radio show. And a lot of the listeners need the radio show because it's the only way to actually laugh whilst talking about all of this horrible, 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 no good, very bad, terrible information that scares the living bejesus out of you.
Yeah, it's a party during a plague.
Yeah, I by the way, you know, this the whole point of this show is actually to make the guests laugh and stuff like that. You know, Lada's written heaps of books, she's gone through heaps of stuff, made awesome predictions and what have you, and then here she is having a wee bit of a cackle and a chuckle of some kind on the webcam. So when we do the archives, and you'll notice this if you go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com /2013.html. You'll scroll down the archives and you'll see all of these people, all of these guests that go on the webcam, snapped exactly when they're at their most cacklicious. That's, that's a mixture of cackling and delicious. And so, it creates a nice vibes and stuff. I'm all looking about good vibes. PayPal apparently isn't, not anymore.
Well, you should try, Bitcoin. You know what that is? Bitcoin.
I've heard of it, never used it.
Very interesting thing. Well, there are different opinions about Bitcoin, but so far, It's currency-wise, electronic currency-wise, it's the only alternative, perhaps, to the U.S. dollar or, you know, any other international currency. It's removed from any government control. People who are interested could go explore it on bitcoin.com. And there are several sites that deal with Bitcoin. It's an interesting concept. So far, Bitcoin has been going up like crazy against the dollar. There are several exchanges. You can purchase it free. Some people actually, especially international businesses, pay their salaries in Bitcoins. I mean, the jury's still out on that. I'm not promoting it or anything. I'm not telling everybody to go and buy it. But it's an interesting something. Alternative.
Yeah. Well, see, just in the meantime, all I want is the same abilities that PayPal gave me, because it's not just all the subscriptions and donations and things that are now fracked. It's actually every single DVD that's for sale off the website, all the blue shields and everything that are for sale off the website. Okay. I now have to completely rebuild it. And I've had to send messages out to all of my subscribers and soon to send them out to all of my donators, telling them that they can't do that anymore and this kind of thing. I've got to, and of course, when you ask people to reset a something that's really easy, like PayPal, it's just like, yeah, click credit card, boom, done, $5 a month, it's coming in, it's no worries. When you ask them to do it into a bank account, there's a whole bunch of other different annoying, complicated things that need to happen. And I predict that I'll probably lose about half of my income that I've built up over the 3 years because of this one incident of PayPal, you know.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to do.
Sorry,
and I can't find a viable alternative. That's what I've discovered, actually, just in my searchings over the last 24, 36 hours. There is no real viable alternative to PayPal with the functionality and all of that kind of stuff. They've got you in a vice.
Yes. It's a monopoly of sorts. Well, you can start a merchant account, but that costs some money to set up. You also have to pay them every month, and you have to buy or lease certain equipment from them and all that for credit card processing, whatnot. Okay, so it depends on what you do, but it's not a cheap proposition to start a merchant account. Some people do that, but you better have enough volume. And also, at first, you actually lose money on that until your volume justifies such an account. That's why there is no alternative to PayPal, which has become this too big to fail monopoly. And they can. That's why they can actually do things like this. And that's outrageous. That's terrible. But there's no alternative. And also, who knows what goes on behind the scenes? Why those accounts are being frozen? That's also very interesting. Nobody knows that for sure. could be a whole new thing that. Undercurrents there. Maybe somebody complained. Maybe somebody. Who knows?
We did have one of my listeners back in the day. He's not a listener anymore. He thinks I'm into the occult, which I'm not. he called up PayPal one time trying to figure out why they wouldn't accept his credit card payments and stuff like that. And you know how with big companies you keep getting the runaround and the runaround and the runaround. Well, he was getting the runaround big time, and eventually he got to listen to a manager speak, and he said, "Do you know who Vinny Eastwood is? Do you know what he does? You know, just kind of like, whoa, okay, there's something going on here." And another time, I think, and this is just what happened recently. Another Patriot Radio show host has kind of started a war with me, and he plays really, 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 really dirty. Might have been him sending in a complaint or something. And also, just recently, I was doing an appeal to get some money donated to pay for Sarah's new car, my girlfriend, so she can, you know, continue to work. Because if she doesn't work, then we're both screwed, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And two really sizable $500 donations came in and we made a withdrawal of like $1,300 from the account. And that might have set off alarms at PayPal or something because it was over a grand. Who knows what it was? Point is, unless I provide documentation that I'm a charitable organization that's registered company, business, or et cetera, or something, they were just going to close my account and the decision's final. So, yeah. I don't know
really
what happened.
Sorry to hear about that. And I really do hope you resolve it quickly. Or, you know, my advice would actually be to find an alternative. To be honest with you, in order to ensure the continuity as a financial consultant, I would advise you to look for alternatives and probably with a backup as well, where you can count on people better than PayPal, because complaints are many.
Yeah. So, well, like I said, the alternative already exists. There's the bank account, but of course, because of its functionality difficulties, it's a bit of a pain in the ass.
It's difficult.
And the other alternative that I've already got up on the website is a donate button for Paymate, which is pretty straightforward. You can donate through that, and that goes directly into my bank account.
Yeah.
And currently looking for a third backup system as well, because Paymate doesn't have an automatic thing like a subscription. Like the cool thing about what PayPal did for me is like people could subscribe for $1 a month, $2, $3, you know, whatever, however much a month, and it automatically kept going in. And Paymate doesn't do that, so I need something that has that function, that specific function, that allows people to donate regularly, because that was actually really the bread and butter. Oh, excuse me. It just means that, well, basically, I don't have to keep chasing up and asking people for donations every single day of the week. They just automatically come in and I can just keep doing the work, you know, focus on it. Because when you're stressed about money and things like that, it just totally throws you off everything that you're doing. Financial stress will literally kill an operation more than actual financial destruction will.
Yes. That's true. It's true for humans. It's true for countries, for businesses, for anything. Yeah, I know. I listened to this interview of yours where you discussed how you were starting out, that for 6 years you lived on bare minimum and couldn't even buy a cup of coffee at some points in your life, right? And because it was so important for you to get this show going and to alert people to what's going on in the world. I mean, I can totally relate to that because, you know, just abandoning, in my case, a very lucrative job, a very lucrative position to actually live my destiny, so to speak, you know, if you will, live my calling, perhaps, and do what I felt was right, and to express myself, to actually say what I want to say, to tell the world what I feel the world should know and should hear. It's a big risk. For most people, this is something that they can't even fathom to start doing in their lives, or to even, like, think about it. That's like, oh, what are you kidding me? What about my insurance? What about my, you know, 2 weeks of fabulous vacation here and there, another 2 weeks over there? What about all the things that I'm used to? What about my luxury car? Et cetera, et cetera, right? I totally understand, and I'm just wishing you the best of luck with resolving all this so that you find a better footing with financial services.
Yeah, yeah. Well, see, I think what happens is if you're doing the right thing, exactly what you need will come to you precisely when you need it, not before, but exactly at the right time. So, you know, but by the time I come to pay my rent next week, it'll cost me $250, and I can guarantee you through some force of heaven or earth or listeners, there will be exactly the $250 in there to pay my rent with. I can guarantee you that. At least I hope so, because if I'm wrong, I'm screwed. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnyedgewoodshow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about commercial slavery. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. AmericanFreedomRadio.com. My very special guest, a predictor and author and a website entrepreneur. I'm not sure if that's an appropriate title. LardaRay.wordpress.com. Welcome back. And we've only got about 10 minutes left in this segment. What would you like to talk about?
Whatever you would like to talk about. We can.
No. It's my show. Whatever you want to talk about.
Yeah, sure. I could say a few words about my books, if you like.
Go ahead.
The books that that I've been talking about earlier, The Earthshifter, it's a fantasy thriller. The ebook is currently available everywhere, pretty much. Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, Kobo, you name it. Smashwords, Sony, Apple. The action is primarily happening in the present day Russia and United States. But it starts in 1908 when a comet of karma is about to crash into the earth. The keepers of the earth, well, remember, it's a fantasy after all. The keepers of the earth, there is this kind of institution that manages the whole existence of the planet, so to speak, from the nebulous realm between heaven and earth. The keepers are discussing whether whether mankind is actually worth saving or not. Remember, 1908, that's several years before the start of the First World War, so they are predicting that the 20th century will be very destructive with two world wars and the weapons of mass destruction, so they're not sure if they should actually save mankind, which chooses to use technology in this destructive fashion. The comet is about to crash. And then we fast forward to the present day, Siberia, Lake Baikal in Siberia, where we meet the protagonist, Sasha, and Siberian shaman, whose name is Tengiz. And from there, everything else evolves. Sasha is supposed to find a counterpart who could be anywhere in the world, who, together with whom, she becomes the key of destiny, which propels the key of destiny, propels mankind to the next level of development. Except if they don't connect, or if the key is corrupted, then the comet comes again. And this time, Earthkeepers will not interfere. So we deal with a secret society akin to the New World Order, you know, Bilderberg Group is modeled after the Bilderberg Group, who want to take over the world. And they enlisted the help of a rogue, I should say, CIA, high-level CIA official and a Russian oligarch who are supposed to help them in their taking over of the entire planet. Except there are forces, of course, there who are interested and who are willing to sacrifice themselves to not let that happen. So the whole book revolves around that. There are also other forces, like the underworld forces as well. And all this is wrapped together in this kind of, like, you know, very realistic, you know, it's based on real world events. So a lot of things feel very real, even though it's a fantasy. So it's that's the Earthshifter. I could also mention Gold Train, which is a conspiracy set in Russia and also has some history, starts in 1918, during the revolution and the civil war in Russia, when the entire gold reserve, this is a historic fact, entire gold reserve of the Russian Empire, which was first or second largest precious metal reserve of its day, gets hijacked and stolen when it's being transported to a safe location. And then it disappears. It just vanishes. And then fast forward to the present day, when Jade Snow, the journalist turned spy extraordinaire, she travels to Russia, trying to investigate the mystery of the gold train. Instead, she lands in the midst of a conspiracy, global conspiracy, which is supposed to change the direction of Russia and also influence events in the world. So it's a very interesting read. There is also romantic suspense going on, which spices it up significantly. Gold Train last year, 2012, when it first came out, was bestseller on Amazon and on Kindle for several weeks. Was hitting different bestseller lists.
Well, you've definitely got some. It's definitely got some appeal there for anybody who likes to consume a good novel. And I also wonder just exactly how much of their own lives do authors base the characters on their books? You know, how which part of me is this character? That kind of thing.
Yes, it's a very interesting question. Good question. Usually, there is some. Authors love to put something from themselves, sometimes as an inside joke, sometimes as a wink to a character, or just like, you know, just for all that to be more personal, more real. And yeah, there are parts of me, perhaps, in Jade Snow. She's a jet setter, globetrotter. She's very well traveled. She speaks several different languages, and she's a very spunky soul, so to speak. Loves to joke, laugh, has a lot of wit, and there's some of me. Although she's a redhead, that obviously that's not me. That part is not me. She loves to dress up, attend balls, that sort of thing. So that there are some interesting similarities.
Well, you know, you take what you know and you write something out of it. I mean, that's what my English teacher Helen Aldridge taught me at Waiheke High School, because I was always writing stuff about when I was a boy about military and blah blah blah. You know, I was obsessed with it. I thought it was really cool. Watched a lot of action movies as a boy. And then I was told this, and my writing just totally changed from action-packed and all of that kind of stuff to just sort of broken characters who had a lot of problems and that kind of stuff. You know, a lot like myself. Maybe I'll write a story about a broken character with PayPal problems.
You obviously, yes, you've got to write about what you know, and it comes across, it's interesting what I know. when you read my books, it's very interesting to see, oh my gosh. As one reviewer pointed out, says, how is it possible that one person knows all this? It's just not possible. I don't know. I guess it's possible if I wrote it already, right? Book I wrote in my head, I was about 10, maybe 12 years old, and it was about a globe-trotting teenager, my age, who was riding planes, very interesting contraptions of all sorts that didn't even exist, riding and solving problems around the world, saving the world, one country at a time. So I guess Jade Snow is the adult version of that teenager, globe-trotting. That's a gold train, and the Earthshifter is similar. I love to save the world, as you see. That's the major theme.
Maybe that's something that was instilled in us from kids. I mean, like, the bad guy was always the one to lose in the end, and the good guy was the one who... Because let's face it, you know, you don't want to see the world end, and nobody wants the bad guy to win, really. It's just kind of changed of late. I mean, I see so many end-of-the-world movies where the bad guys are almost, you're supposed to look up to them and feel sorry for them or something like that.
Yeah. Well, it's good. It's interesting that you should mention this. This is a something that is unfortunately part of this decade. We are in a very interesting decade when zombies and vampires took over both the screen and the publishing industry. That's all you see. Well, I mean, that's not to say you shouldn't have dark characters, of course. You know, my characters go through terrible trials and tribulations. They have to overcome terrible difficulties. I do have Underworld, but incidentally, and a very interesting Underworld-style character in The Earthshifter. She really steals the show, some people feel. When it becomes overpowering, that's actually very, very difficult. We were discussing this recently. We are going through a publishing revolution of sorts. It's a massive publishing revolution. E-books are overtaking published books. Although I still love the feel of the real book in my hands. Oh, incidentally, I don't know, I didn't show it. That's the Gold Train. And The Earthshifter in paperback form is coming out by April 1st. It should be on Amazon. You can also purchase it on my website, ladaray.com. You can purchase it there it will be autographed.
Oh, wow. That's very nice. All right. Well, Lada, thank you very much for sharing some of your valuable time with us. Quite light, nice and lovely. Thank you. I've really enjoyed this.
Very nice to talk to you, Vinny. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Have yourself a very nice day, evening, or whatever the hell the time zone may be in your part of the world at the moment.
Yeah, it would be about 7 p.m.
All right. That's not that bad. Okay. Well, okay. Thank you very much, and thank you for listening, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back next hour, hopefully, with more stories of intrigue and scumbaggery from another guest named Sean Horos, I think. Should be interesting. We'll be right back.
Airwaves, bandwidth, disinformation, too bad. Check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from this fabulously little fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island-chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's also, incidentally, Fukushima irradiated, which is good for the economy because everybody now has a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. Okay, now, shifting the time zone to the direct opposite, where it is now midday, I believe, here in New Zealand when we're recording this, and it is now midnight in Switzerland, where he is, Sean Horos. Welcome back to the program. Oh, welcome to the program for the first time, I should say.
Hello, Vinny. It's midnight here.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Finding it hard to stay awake. Okay, so why don't you just break it down for us, Sean, and inform us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do.
Okay, my name is Sean Ross. I'm 50 years old. I'm a South African. I'm a white South African and a veteran of a couple of wars in South Africa. I'm against wars. because we shouldn't fight the wars for the pharaohs. And my theory is that the pharaohs are ruling the world. That's why it says in the Bible that the pharaoh and its army disappeared in the sea. Well, of course, the sea never opened. It means they disappeared in the sea of peoples. They are amongst us. And that's why they put all those obelisks everywhere. And the obelisk is the symbol of the pharaonic domination. It's also a phallic symbol. And as it is carved on top, it's a symbol of the circumcision, which comes from the pharaohs. Actually, they only circumcise their slaves, like the Americans. Most of the Americans are circumcised, and they are the slaves. We know it. Even the Americans know it. And they have specific reasons that the circumcision is only for the slaves. I made a film about it on my channel, Hatzefratz. That's C-H-A-T-Z-E-F-R-A-T-Z. And my other channel is Gure, which is G-I-U-R-E-H. And the other channel, you can find it on this channel. So if you want to find me, just type in The Pharaoh Show, and then you'll find me. This is a 1.5-hour film about the proofs that the pharaohs are here and all the secret symbols they are putting everywhere on their key positions, mostly on the fronts of houses. And that means if you see like the sun hieroglyph on, or the joining, these are symbols most people don't know. If you see them on the fronts of houses, that means like in the Middle Ages or during the 30-Year War, which was the worst war for Europe and especially the worst for the Germans, where 2/3 of the population got murdered. In this war, the Germans were the victims only. And if they have this, because they're very mixed with us, and it's really the enemy within, and they can't be recognized anymore, and they've got problems within their community as well. So they decided to put these secret symbols on the fronts of houses and over the doors. And that means, like in a war, you can knock on the door if you're also pharaonic descent, and don't burn down the house, don't destroy it, don't kill the people in here. But you can kill all the Europeans around it, no problem. And this is one of the ways they organized. And
like ancient laser targeting.
Yeah, that's a good thing. Ancient laser targeting. Well, one of their lasers is like the obelisk. And as I said, it's a symbol of the pharaonic domination. It's also a phallic symbol. And that means this is a symbol of their warfare, the phallic or the male sexual organ. That means we mix first with the local populations. Until after 5 generations only, we can't be recognized anymore. And then we fight our host from the inside out, like a virus. And that's what they do.
Now, the pharaohs make these obelisks really big, right? Do you think maybe they're compensating for something?
As it is carved on top, and, there's something missing there. Yeah, that's a symbol of the circumcision, so you might say that in a way, yeah. I mean, people have to organize like that and can't be a man like just by themselves and do the war by themselves. I mean, they have to compensate for certain things. And their way of waging wars, exactly about, it's a very good question you're asking me here. The way they wage wars is they take over all key positions. And they have the peoples fight each other on a difference of ideology, like communism against fascism or against capitalism, or a difference in the color of skin, a difference in religion. And so they don't fight the wars themselves. They have us fight the wars for them. And like in the Second World War, there was one empire, like Germany, the war concerning the loss of human lives was between Germany and Russia, actually. The Russians, they lost 25 million of their people. It's unbelievable. And the Germans, about 78% of their men. So all the men were dead. So after the war, who takes all the women, the land, the power, the cattle, and everything? Well, that's the enemy within. like Stalin was, Hitler was, and this is the word, the Third Reich. The word Reich in German, that means the empire. So there's one empire, Germany, that's fighting the second empire, that's Russia, and then there is the third party, the enemy within, or the Third Reich. And that's the Third Empire, and this is where the New World Order actually started in 1945. And yeah, they have to compensate for something, because they don't fight the wars, they have us do it. And that's why we have all these Hollywood films. So all these young men, they think, well, I mean, this is the man, this is the only way to be a real man. You know, they show it, they're like in a Hollywood film with some nice music. And I mean, there are no more initiations like before. The Celtic people had this, the Germanic or the Native Americans, they probably still have some of it, where a young man, when he was 16, he got initiated in being a warrior and a man. But that doesn't exist anymore. So a lot of young men, they think, well, we have to go, like in a Hollywood film, we have to go into the war, and then we are a man. But and this is one of the films I made as well recently. It's called A Warrior Versus a Soldier. You can look it up on YouTube. And there are many differences between a warrior and a soldier. I will just read a couple of the text, which you can find out on YouTube. So, like, a warrior is able to take decisions himself. A soldier needs a general to take up orders. A warrior thinks autonomously and is spiritual. A soldier takes drugs and alcohol. A warrior has a code of honor. A soldier possesses neither conscience nor ethics. A warrior protects children because they're sacred. A soldier kills them, as in My Lai, Auschwitz, and all air raids on cities and bombs on children's rooms and all genocides, mass murders and massacres on civilians. All that soldiers enjoyed doing so. It's supposed to be good for the esprit de corps or something of a kind. Etc. You can look it up, and this is actually one of the messages I would like to give to the American people. I mean, be a warrior and defend children, and don't kill him. Don't be a soldier, because there's a big difference. And actually, the thing you wanted to be was a soldier. A warrior and a man, and not just a soldier. Actually, because there's a very big difference.
A warrior of the Jarhead Clan.
A warrior of the what?
The Jarhead Clan.
Oh, I don't know that.
You ever heard of a Marine?
Jarhead Clan. Yeah, I know. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's actually a quote from Avatar. And I was thinking of this as well. I think maybe as little as yesterday, precisely what is the difference between a soldier and a warrior? Like, I see that there's a difference in how force is applied, whereas one is to protect, one is to destroy, much like the Autobots and Decepticons. And the it just occurs to me that one group of people usually want to conquer, they're full of hate, and ultimately that hate is bestilled upon them, and going in to conquer things is actually something they're ordered to do, rather than them actually manifest that hate themselves and make their own decisions about who they go and attack, kind of thing. Like, they're merely pawns in the game. And the other side of it, the protectorate, they have things that are, they hold ideals that are higher than just my life, like, kind of thing. It's actually about saving more lives than you lose, sort of thing. Like, if you've ever seen the new film Star Trek, your father was a star captain for 12 minutes. He saved 800 lives. I dare you to do better. That kind of thing. It occurs to me that it's a warrior will sacrifice himself, whereas a soldier will gladly sacrifice everybody else, because a warrior thinks for himself for the benefit of others. A soldier does no thinking whatsoever and only works for the benefit of whoever's giving him orders.
Yeah, and exactly about sacrificing yourself. I mean, all the soldiers actually in all these wars, they were sacrificed at a very young age. The soldiers that were like at Omaha Beach, they were 17 years old or 18 years old, 19 years old. And it should be the other way around. So, I mean, there were a lot of parents and fathers who had to carry their sons into the grave. And this is a very unnatural thing. A real war against the enemy within, which we should do very soon now, it should be that the older generation should make the sacrifice because we have lived. I mean, I'm 50, you know, I've lived and I've got children and I'd be happy to do the sacrifice for them rather like this than the other way around. And actually, I was filming at Omaha Beach in December. I made the film, well, you find Omaha Beach on my channel, you find it. And there was a wall of the commemoration there, sort of the U-formed stone wall. And on the outside of the wall, there's the same pyramid like on the dollar, which says the New World Order, Novus Ordo Seclorum. And on the other side, there's the American Eagle. And where the claws are, it says 666. Really, it says 666. You can see it. And, of course, it was on June the 6th. And June is the sixth month of the year at 6 o'clock. And I'm not a religious person, but it does make 666. And I know if you go back to the pharaohs, actually, further on at the cemetery, it's a huge cemetery with all those crosses. And well, you can also find Jews. So they are David stars instead of crosses. So they died as well. And at the end of the cemetery, you find Isis with a falcon on her shoulder. And next to her is La Marianne, which is the French Isis. Like the Statue of Liberty is Isis. And here in Switzerland, they got Helvetia. The Germans, they have one. And, well, it's everywhere. It's all over. And the French, La Marianne, she's having a rooster, which is also it's the same thing. I have to tell you the story because this is the Isis, the Horus Matrix. Isis, she was pregnant. This is very important to understand all these wars. And you'll find the proofs in my film. And so Isis, she was pregnant with her husband, Osiris. And Osiris had a brother. He was not his real brother, but he was a brother as men are supposed to be brothers. And the brother, his name was Seth. Or Saturn, which is Satan, actually. And Seth, he is the god of the underworld for the pharaohs. And Seth, he told Isis, like the devil talking to Eve, if you want, he said, well, if we kill your man, then you can raise your son alone. Like, make out of him what you want. You can make a garden gnome out of him. He will be completely obedient. There is no fatherly tradition like a father tells his son, like, son, listen, life is like this and like this. And I'm going to give you an initiation, like being a man and a warrior. And I'm going to teach you things for later on in life. And so Isis, well, they killed Osiris and they scattered his body all over the Nile. And so Isis, she escaped to the River Nile and she gave birth to her son, Horus. And she could raise Horus the way she wanted and Seth wanted it. So in this way, mankind could be raised again. Not after the image of God, but after the image of Seth and Isis, or Satan, Sethon. And it's the same thing, like if you have a wolf and you want to make a dog, well, you have to take the puppy, and then you can mold it the way you want. And this is the same thing. This is why the statue of Isis is on the American cemetery in Omaha Beach. And this I call the Horus Matrix, and this is why we have all these wars. So all these men die, and the women, they stay behind, pregnant, and they can raise mankind new from scratch after the image Seth and Isis have made for mankind. And this is the reason why we have all these stupid wars men, brothers fighting brothers. And actually, the enemy is not another soldier in another uniform. The enemy is your own general and your own president, and that's the enemy within. And they and them we have to fight, not the other soldier. I mean, here in Europe, now the Germans, the French and the English, we're all friends now. And just only 50 years ago, they all murdered each other and dropped bombs on children's rooms. And
I think we're about to go to break.
Okay.
I stand alone against your mad, deadly, worldwide, conspiratorial, gangster, computer god communism with wall-to-wall, deadly gangster protection, lifelong sworn conspirators, murder incorporated organized crime, the police and judges, the deadly sneak parroting puppet gangsters using all the gangster deadly Frankenstein controls, these hangman rope sneak deadly gangsters, the judges
Welcome
and the police,
back.
Trick, trap, rob, Rick.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My special guest is Sean Ross. Is it pronounced Ross or Ross? What was it?
Yeah, well, you don't pronounce the H. Actually, it's an old Nordic name. And if you interchange the R and the O, you get horse. And if you take away the H, it gets Ross, in, like in German. So the Germanic tribes, they split into two ways. And Ross, it means also a horse, like horse. It's etymologically the same. It's the first word for horse. It is still being used in Iceland, actually.
How interesting. Yeah. Well, speaking of Iceland, there's a dude from Iceland who's speaking here in Auckland tonight. I think about 5:30 at the Auckland University, the Owen Glenn Business School. He's going to be talking about how he led the Iceland Revolution, which jailed a couple of the big, massive, evil bankers, and got their country back on track, economically speaking. So that's bound to be fun. Here's an obscure reference for you.
I heard something about this, yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm a veteran as well. I was in the war in Angola, Namibia, in South Africa, in Rhodesia, in Cabinda. And it's wrong, all these wars. I mean, we're fighting the wars for imperialism, for others to get rich, and we die. I was in Afghanistan as well in 1985. I can't talk too much about it. There's something you have to know. There's a name. It's very important. It's called Octagon. It's with a C. Octagon. Octagon. So look it up on YouTube. You get to my film like Octagon Rules Over Pentagon. And they do rule over Pentagon. So what's Octagon? The CIA, they also have some files over it. They call it the Red House files. There's not many people who know about it. And I know that Octagon did 9/11 as well. So Octagon, it's like eight-shaped or octagonal shape. And why octagonal? Because if you draw a line around the Templar's cross, you get an octagonal shape. And the Swiss cross is also, it's a simplified Templar's cross with the same colors. And if you draw a line around it, you get an octagonal shape. And this is why most of the police badges in England, New Zealand, Australia, the police hats in New York, they all have an octagonal shape. Because in the Middle Ages, it was the Templars. And nowadays, Templars is the Blue Octagon Army. It's the police. And they rule. They are the Templars. They never disappeared. And actually, they founded Switzerland. And this is a very strange country. They financed the wars. They financed Adolf Hitler in 1923 with 30,000 Swiss francs, which is about $500,000 today. Funny enough, after the Black Tuesday, before the American Depression in 1929 October, only 6 months later, the Nazis with Hjalmar Schacht, he was the Nazi banker of Hitler, they founded a bank in Basel, which is called the BIS, which is the Bank of International Settlements, which is the bank, the central bank of all the central banks. And this is how they got the money of what was stolen of the Americans just before the Depression. This is how they got it into Switzerland, and they financed the Nazis with it. This is how they did it. And which is very important to know is that the last of the Crusades took place in 1291. And Achim in the north of Israel now, that fell on May 18th, 1291. Only 2.5 months later, the time to get back, they founded Switzerland. On August 1st, 1291. It's still the national holiday, which they celebrate each year. So it's very obvious, and if you look at the flag, that the Templars, they founded Switzerland. And and it's very obvious as well, because the Templars, they were the banks of Europe during the Middle Ages for hundreds of years. And they invented the check, and they lent money to kings and all that. So it's very obvious that the famous Templars treasure went into Switzerland. And actually, the aim was not Jerusalem, though they killed many people there. A lot of Jews they killed as well. All of them, probably, in Jerusalem. And the aim was the pyramids and the Pharaoh's treasures, because the Templars, they were no monks. The Templars, in fact, they were second. It was a tradition in the Middle Ages for a second or third son, a nobleman or a king or a baron or something. He didn't get anything. It was only the first son who got the castle, the power, the cattle, the concubines, everything. And for the second, third sons or daughters, there was a tradition to go into a monastery. And in the monastery, there were so many of them at a certain moment, they got organized and they said, well, we're fed up with this monastery life. We're going to make our own kingdom. And for a kingdom, you need money. And that's why they did the crusades to, not Jerusalem, in fact, but to the pyramids. And in order to get the military support of the Europeans, they said the same thing like in 91, before the Gulf War, as they said, well, Saddam Hussein is having weapons of mass destruction. Then they said, well, there's this holy city where God lives and the Son of God with his mother and his grandmother. It's called Jerusalem and it must be saved. So that's how they got all the Europeans with them. And Octagon is so the name of the Templars, and they are ruling this world, and they did 9/11. And actually, there were more and more of these pharaohs, and the word pharaoh is coming etymologically from two words in the Demotic language, which is a sort of simplified pharaonic hieroglyph language, because the hieroglyphs were only used for religious purposes only. So there was a Demotic language, and the word pharaoh is coming from two words, per-a. And per, it means the house, and big, that means, and a, it means big. So that means a big house, which is not the pyramid, but it is the big royal house of the pharaonic bloodline.
And so this it's not like New Jersey slang for jail.
For jail?
Yeah, the big house.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one. Yeah? I didn't know that. Is it that big? Don't they have small prisons?
Well, I don't know. The rate of incarceration of nonviolent criminals these days, I bet they should be pretty frickin' big.
Yeah. Actually, for my YouTube films, they sent me in 2011, they sent me a terrorist court. I don't call it an anti-terrorist court. It was a terrorist court. They put three guns on my head, a bandage over my eyes, handcuffs, foot cuffs. And now I'm getting murder threats by Octagon that I shouldn't talk about the Templars and Octagon and that they're ruling the world. And actually, in those days, there were coming more and more pharaohs in Europe, and they were having wars because all of them wanted to be the king and wanted to have the castle, as I just explained with the Templars and all that. So the wars, we had to fight them over their problems. And but after hundreds of years of wars, because the king, he wanted to stay king for all his life. And after that, he even decided his son and his grandsons would be the king afterwards. So there were a lot of other pharaohs who wanted to be king as well. And after all these wars, they said, well, we have to get together. So they got together. And they came to a conclusion. They said, well, we can't go on like this because we're going to destroy everything. We're not going to get any further. Not even we get any further. Not our slaves either. And so they decided a new system. And they said, well, everybody can be king for 4 years. You know what I'm getting at, eh?
Yeah, and, the presidency.
Yeah, and then they said, well, how are we, who's going to vote for being king for 4 years? We can't vote because nobody is impartial of us. We know what's going on. And then some of them said, the stupid people, they're going to vote, the demos. So and this is how democracy started off, and it is a circus. You know, it's...
Sean, I see so many people promoting... freedom. And complaining about the loss of their democracy and how we need more democracy and things like that because we're being overruled by vicious tyrants. Excuse me, it was vicious tyrants that came up with democracy and vicious tyrants that benefit from democracy as well. Why do you still want the thing that gives you vicious tyrants controlled by vicious tyrants?
Very well said, Vinny. Very well. Exactly. This is how it is. And these, I call them the Nazis, the Nazis, they were the Templars as well. Hitler, he was financed. I've got pictures of him being in Switzerland in 1923. And Octagon, that's Switzerland, the Freemasons, they came out of the Templars. So Octagon, it's like a spider's web. A spider has eight legs as well, just like octagonal. And Octagon, Switzerland, they're ruling the whole world. And they're giving orders to the worldwide web of Freemasons, and they're sitting all everywhere in every government on key position. And that's why no country in the world will ever do anything against the Swiss banks, which came from the Templars, and against Switzerland. No country will ever do anything against that.
I was thinking Truthers should start some kind of a banking thing. Like, I've had the problem with PayPal recently, and I was just thinking how awesome it would be to have a Truther run Cayman Islands or Swiss Bank or something like that, so that all the people who are actually fighting for freedom and justice and things like that in the world would have their own financial havens where the bankers couldn't steal their frickin' money. But the problem is all those havens are controlled by the bankers in the first place.
Yeah, they are. I want to tell you another thing. I mean, I was in the military for a while. I know a couple of things. And there's this torture going on, like waterboarding. And waterboarding, actually, the code name of waterboarding is not waterboarding inside the service. The name is O2T. O2 for oxygen and T for torture. And this is a white torture because there's no proof. There's no no flesh wounds. But every cell in the body is going to be damaged because of the it's a human fact that when a human breathes in, 80% of the oxygen goes into the head first, and so this is where the information is. And this type of torture, like a person that can't breathe, it will create a hypoxia, which is a lack of oxygen in the organs, tissues. And this further on will make a glycolysis, which is a chemical breakdown of glucoses into lactic acids, acids under anaerobic conditions. So if you see those guys like in Gitmo or Guantanamo with these masks, I mean, we've all been asking, why do they have these masks? Well, they have them because they can't breathe enough. They can only, they will never get enough oxygen. It's hot there as well. So they're being tortured by O2T, and this will wreck a person for the rest of his life because every cell in the human body will be tortured, and you don't see a thing from the outside. I have some medical analysis of it, official. Don't ask me how I got them. And this has to do with the reason as well that I don't want to put the video on. There's an English bloke, a Scottish bloke, he has put them on the internet under the Zurich files in Google. And I made a film about it where I filmed it, I videotaped it so you can read it. So just look for O2T and then you know what waterboarding really is.
Okay. Well, it's just basically oxygen deprivation. Like they try all these different types of deprivation on you, like sleep deprivation, food deprivation, water deprivation, light deprivation, human contact deprivation, I think. And I'm noticing a common theme here. If you want to torture somebody, if you want them to suffer, just take away the things that they need to survive properly.
Yeah, it's very well said with the deprivation. Exactly, that's it. Yeah? Yeah, and oxygen is the most important thing. I mean, you can't do very long without oxygen.
It's really quite... and what the interesting thing I find about it is, torture doesn't actually work. Like, if you're trying to get information out of somebody, torturing doesn't actually work. The only thing torture really accomplishes is scare the hell out of people who aren't being tortured. Like, that's basically the point of it, isn't it? It's pure terrorism. Meet our demands or we will torture you. And I don't care what information you give us. We're going to make you suffer and we're going to torture your children in front of you and your wife and your family and all of that kind of stuff, right? That's the whole intention of it, to scare people off fighting against them for fear that they might get tortured. Whereas those people who are being deprived of their human rights and liberties and things like that, they're very, very rarely anybody who possesses any information. And the torturer doesn't give a frack if they've got information or not. It's just their job to terrorize them, you know? And yet, they're not the terrorists, are they? No, it's the people that they're torturing without trials or rights of any kind that are the bad guys, right? Isn't that how we're supposed to really look at things, in the exact opposite way to the way things really are? How did society get like this? You know, how do we slowly turn from caring about others, thinking that rights mattered, and having a heart, having a brain, having a soul, to being this massive? Put your right up.
On December 16th, 1961, the world turned upside down, then inside out, and I was born screaming in America. It was the tail end of the American dream, just before we lost our innocence irrevocably, when the TV eye brought the horror of our lives into our homes for all to see. I was told when I grew up I could be anything I wanted. A fireman, a policeman, a doctor, even president, it seemed. And for the first time in the history of mankind, something new called an astronaut. But like many kids growing up on a steady diet of Westerns, I always wanted to be the cowboy hero. That lone voice in the wilderness, fighting corruption and evil wherever I found it, and standing for freedom, truth, and justice. And in my heart of hearts, I still track the remnants of that dream wherever I go, in my never-ending ride into the setting sun.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's our final segment here with Sean Ross, or Sean the Horse, as he's known to his military chums. Welcome back.
Yeah, hello. Yeah, so I'd like to. I'm quite impressed, by the way, by the way you're doing the show. I mean, it's very good. You're an intelligent man. The way you you grab things and you have a lot of knowledge. So my respect, Vinny.
A lot of that knowledge comes from people who are more knowledgeable than I in the real ways of the world, because I'm just kind of young and I have to absorb all this information via vicariously, sort of by osmosis. I never get to really have a lot of these experiences myself. These are just things that I'm told by people that are older and wiser than myself.
Yeah, so being humble is one of your other good characteristics. Good, very good. Yeah, I want to tell you about like 9/11. There's an important thing to know, that one of the biggest sacrificial holidays of the pharaohs is September the 11th. It's called Enku Tatach. You can find it out and look in Google. It's still being celebrated in Ethiopia nowadays. It's their new year, by the way. And it's a sacrificial festivity, actually. And 9/11 was done by Octagon, and I tell you why. The aim was to destabilize the Arab financial world, and due to the consequent U.S. invasions into the Muslim world, the whole financial world got destabilized. Afterwards, we had the banking chaos, and they robbed a lot of our money. Saddam Hussein, he fell, and Gaddafi, he fell. They all fell. So the Swiss bank, the Swiss banks, the Templar banks, they made enormous amounts of money, and they all got it into Switzerland, into Octagon. And so there's a lot of people who say, well, the Jews did it and all. I can tell you, I'm not a religious person, or I'm not a Jew lover as well, but it doesn't fit. It's not them. It's, I mean, in the Middle Ages here in Europe, we already had the nobility, and we were their slaves. And there was a time there weren't even any Jews yet. And they were the ones in power then. There never was any sign that they stepped down from power. They just went into Freemasonry. They got another uniform. They went over to the U.S. and everything. So, no, I don't think it's the Jews. I wouldn't mind, actually, I mean, if somebody thinks it. But it doesn't fit. We want the real enemies of mankind. And it doesn't fit. I mean, the Jews, they were already fighting the New World Order in Masada, fighting the Romans. They were fighting the British Empire. They killed their own blowing up the King David Hotel. They even killed their own president. They're burning the Israeli flag, they do, because the religious ones, they say, well, God never told us to have our own state, and they're going to punish us. No, it doesn't fit. It was Octagon. And the financial world, and due to the collapse of the Arab financial world, they made an enormous amount of money, and that was the aim of it.
Hey, Sean, yeah. I wanted to know, do you have a website of your own? Because Googling you here, you come up on a lot of very high-profile places, you know, Project Avalon, davidicke.com, plenty of YouTube videos. So I was wondering if you have a website of your own.
No, I don't. I'm a real jerk with computers. I never really learned it. It's only 2.5 years ago I did my first email in my life. And actually tonight, with the help of my 12-year-old son, it's the first time in my life I'm Skyping. And, I never learned it. And, I was tortured as well through O2T, and, they really destroyed my health. That was here in Octagon. I can't even go out of the house alone anymore due to the threats of the Swiss Nazi police and the Swiss Nazi justice department. It's really bad, and they did destroy my health. And I don't have any friends here in this country here, so there's nobody really who can help me. So unfortunately, no, I don't have a website, but I have these two YouTube channels, and if other people put my films on their websites, I don't mind. I just want to change something, and that's my aim. I want, you know, freedom and justice in this world, and that the bad ones that will get them and finish them. You know.
So, do you know what the name of your YouTube channels are?
Yeah,
Chat Zifrats. I've got here.
What?
Is it Chat Zifrats?
Yeah, Chat Zifrats, that's the one. And the other one is Gure, that's G-I-U-R-E-H. But if you just type in The Pharaoh Show or Octagon, you will come automatically to one of my films on my channel. And, also the films about the Omaha Beach and all the other proofs. Also about the... depression and how the Bank of International Settlements was founded just 6 months later in order
okay,
to...
Okay, so that's... All right, so that's Glure, G-L-U-R-E-H?
No, that's G-I-U-R-E-H. There's no L.
That's interesting. Oh, G-I-U, do you mean?
Yeah, R-E-H.
Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah.
So it's, and on this channel, you can find the name of the other channel as well.
Okay. All right.
First film I did was 2.5 years ago, and I didn't even know how to do an upload and all this. And now it's about the only thing I know is just, you know, I can't do any cuts in the films. I just push the button, film it, and talk at the same time, and then I upload it, and that's all I can do.
Well, you know what? I know a lot of people who are really talented filmmakers who don't get anything up at all, ever.
Yeah, that exists as well, yeah.
So you got that going for you. You don't know what you're doing, yet you're actually accomplishing something. Yet I know a hell of a lot of people who know heaps about it who don't accomplish nothing.
Yeah, well, I don't want to boast, but that's a philosophical thing. There are two types of intelligence. You know, there are people who can suck up a lot of things at the university or at a film school or video school to learn how to make videos and all that. And then there's another type of intelligence, people who can find out things, and an autonomous sort of intelligence and invent things. And for inventors, there's a lot of sensitive people, actually. And nowadays, all the power in the world is in the hands of all these people who have been sucking up all the things, the sensitive people, who were the inventors who invented it, like cars and all these things, the television, everything. And these people are sensitive. They are being pushed down by all these cold-hearted people who only can suck up things like 6 years in university, but who can never in their lives can invent anything. And this is one of the reasons why the whole society is going down the drain. Because these people who can suck up things, which is a part of our intelligence, but it's not an independent sort of intelligence. It's not an intelligence like inventing things. And all the inventions are in the hands of commercial people, businessmen, and people have been studying like 6 or 7 years. And if you've been pumping your head full of things 6 or 7 years, then there's no more place to invent anything or see something which is not in the process of a university or something. It's the same with music. People have been on the conservatory and things like that. There's a lot of Russian composers who said this, and that's why the Russian composers hardly ever went to a conservatory, because they know if you fill your mind up with all of these things for 6 or 7 years, you can never compose anything anymore in your whole life.
You know, it's interesting. I was going to make a short film, and I'd wrote the script, and I'd come up with all these different camera angles and things to that, and I wanted to do the whole thing in one shot, right? And my cousin Daisy, Lucy Lawless, you know, Xena Warrior Princess's daughter, she's my cousin, and he got into this cafe, and she didn't do anything at all to help me, because she got gone to film school. She didn't actually tell me anything that I could do or should do or that might help or would help. She just kept telling me things that I shouldn't do. Like, for example, don't do the same kind of camera panning as they did in the Darjeeling Limited. Yeah. Like, obscure BS that doesn't mean anything is not helpful or anything. And that's what schooling does to you, I think. It stops you from being creative. It stops you from freeing your mind enough to create new things.
It's exactly, a real shame. That's so true. And actually, a lot of information has come up, like in my films, through enormous sufferings. And I think this is yet the true essence of being a martyr. I'm not a religious person, but I must admit that I suffered so much, really. I've seen my children suffering, the torture, the terror. And all of a sudden, my eyes opened up, and I could pierce through the clouds, and I really got information in a way I don't even really understand sometimes.
Yeah. Oh well, it doesn't matter anymore. Well, thank you very much, Sean, for coming on the show with me today. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you can check out the archives at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, and we upload the YouTube videos every day to the YouTube channel Mr. News Guerrilla Media. Check it out on YouTube. We'll see you again sometime, folks. Thanks.